Maybe it's also like we could sort of ally ourselves with different movements that maybe we ourselves were in, or we sort of knew people who were in them, like because there is this obviously this need and this sort of desire for publishing, and I think that this book, in a way, it was the first time that we tried, like, okay, if we try to make that collaboration, and also if it's more than just a transactional thing, but actually we want to become part of the activist group that is making a publication, then what does that actually look like? And in reality, it actually turned out to be quite a challenge. It was a good idea, and I think it's still a good idea. But
thanks.
But you encounter many things that you maybe didn't think about before, such as who is part of this group. Every especially in the beginning, every meeting we did, new people would show up, and then at some point almost nobody would show up, and there was this sort of I suppose the challenge in how to do this in a non-hierarchical way, how to make sure that everyone sort of feels listened to, but at the same time, of course, because we have this sort of longer term project, we were also the ones kind of maybe giving the structure to the process that was happening. And then in terms of design, I guess the challenge was really, this word collage was indeed there from the beginning, and we had so many, and you'll see this in the book also, it's so many different types of testimonies. There's written text of many kinds, that we had so much photographic material also because of the archive. So it really became a challenge of, okay, collage, but what does that mean? If we throw everything together, then quickly saw that doesn't really work. So
yeah, I remember thinking in the beginning that we thought we'd just throw a bunch of stuff together and then we have a book.
We're just going to make a zine.
In like 2 months, we have a...
Yeah, it's going to be quick.
Maybe, Alina, you join us a little bit later. You had uploaded a lot of pictures also into our archive, no? Or not?
I did not.
No, you did not. That's why we had to track you down
and
steal your pictures.
No.
But then you became part of the group. I was for you to like join a bit later in the project, like what was your involvement with the protest, and then I was for you to like provide all this photographic material that you had and then put that into a book form.
So, I mean, full disclosure, during the times of the encampment, I was also a student, so I was part of the encampment, allegedly, I was part of the encampments. We all were allegedly part of the encampments, maybe. So I was there to document for my own sake and for my own understanding, because I was doing a research on protest, and I didn't know where this would lead. It did lead me to skipping some exams at a certain point because they overlapped with the encampments, but it was a good choice ultimately, because I managed to contribute all these wonderful pictures to your wonderful publication, to our wonderful publication. My role was a bit being the person that showed up to that 50-plus meeting in the People's University, and then not really keeping in touch with that. And then at a certain point being approached by you, I think
so, allegedly,
yeah, to be told that I have some nice pictures, maybe I would like to contribute them, and then to be told maybe I have some more nice pictures, I'd like to contribute them. And it's not as if I had some reluctance to contribute to the publication, it's more like I didn't know where it led, because the initial meeting that we had with all these people did sound like a meeting to make a zine or a newspaper, or, well, it was called the People's Paper, right?
Yeah, in the beginning it was called the People's Paper.
Correct, so it was something that was supposed to be like really quick, really like putting it together so that it can, well, be published and be out into the world fast. But I think there was another publication that was made at the same time which got there first, which was the Intifada, and they had...
Shout out to the Intifada.
I don't know who's behind that. But they were really fast, and they already had published two issues, which were distributed directly during the next encampments that happened. So we missed that mark. But I'm glad that somehow there was this core team that continued and tried to meet and put things together, and eventually that I was asked to contribute my pictures to all this, because I think it's... I mean, pictures are part of it, but then pictures also get transformed into other things. I love the fact that the back cover of the book is actually a rendition of one of my pictures, but it's a drawing. So it's basically what I did and what I contributed with was giving material that can serve to inspiration for others as well, and just adding it up there and helping with the narrative. And I'm glad I was asked, because ultimately this material exists and I used it for my own purposes and my own research, but I think it's much better when it's part of a collective voice, because this was a collective experience. We all, I mean, it's a very patchy narrative, but I think this is how we all experienced it, and it's nice that it comes together in one, and we're all trying to make sense of what it was. Yeah,
it's true. I think that's correct, that it's like a patchy narrative, or it's almost like a sort of anti-narrative or a sort of non-narrative, because we were really reluctant, I think, from the beginning to impose one perspective or one interpretation or one theory or a writing of history to the events. We thought that, like, the honest way to do something with the events was to reflect their inherent multiplicity, and the fact that it meant a lot to a lot of people. And we thought, I think, always that this affective dimension was extremely important to show in the work, like in the material, but also in how it was assembled. More than saying, like, this is how it was, or purely archiving, or I think that was kind of the attempt, which also made it very difficult. Like, we worked on it for a long time. Maybe you want to say something about that, Karagas, about this. You know, like, it was the idea to make a quick zine, and then we worked on it for a year. Like, you could also wonder, like, is that time well spent? Like, should we make a book about an uprising? Shouldn't we just, like, make an uprising? Like, how did you feel about spending your time, like, working on a project like this rather than organizing, so to speak?
In general, I don't believe there's a right or wrong decision. I think we took a decision and we supported it pretty well, because it was honest with the immense amount of material that we received. And I think that's what made us stop from making this people's paper or the zine. And yeah, we decided to give value to all of this material that we received and be real with it, include it in the part of the collage, because that was the most honest thing to do. And in terms of how long it took to be made, okay, there's moments that I was like, yeah, halas, it's frustrating. But there was other moments that I'm like, going through all the Rutgers Island and all of this, going through the pictures together. And I think it was a very special way to relive and heal kind of this moment. And it was still doing it together without, you know, and, you know, seeing, this comrade, that comrade, oh, remember when they took this? Oh, I remember when they did that. And then we're laughing a bit, and then we're like, oh, what the fuck is this? So, yeah, I think it really, I think it honors our effort, and it also honors everyone who worked silently, everyone who is not included, like their face is not included in the book, everyone who contributed in any kind of way. And I think with all this material that we have, we decided to spend all this time to properly archive it, give it love, and I think this is what we have today. So.
Yeah. Thanks. Do you want to respond to that, Alina?
I just wanted to say I don't think any of us has stopped organizing during the last year and just focused on the publication. So it's
no, that's true.
Yeah.
It was like a, how do you say, like a, I don't know, like a
yeah.
Fake, how do you call it? False tegenstelling.
Yes, understood. But it's just, it's more like people have done things in parallel, of course, but I think it's also very important to have this sort of, capsule of that moment, because with protest, what happens is, like, things get forgotten, especially if you have a lot of it organized online, especially if things just, like, travel and disappear, and you need this sort of way of remembering, because otherwise you're just going to be left with the trauma associated with it, because it was a traumatic event if you think about all the violence involved in it, and not really the chance to reflect and look back and process.
I think that's true, and it's like, it's also just like another way of bringing a lot of people together, like in this way, but also in this book there are like a lot of people in this book, which I think is kind of cool. Maybe to wrap it up, I just related to the inherently collective aspect of this book, like the making it, but also of course what it is about. You were the main designer of this thing. Like, I think that posed quite a lot of challenges to you to do it like justice. But can you say something? Maybe I think like what makes this book special is apart from like what's in there, it really is how it's made. How it's designed. So maybe you want to say something about how you like dealt with these difficulties or challenges or problems.
For sure. Yeah. I guess where to start? Like, one idea that was kind of floating around very early on was this idea of the anti-book, which is this academic called Nicholas Thorburn wrote a paper about this, and he talks about this zine that was made after the Baltimore uprising, after the killing of Freddie Gray, which is simply screenshots of Twitter messages, and it's sort of this book without an author, but it has a collective author. That was really a big reference, and also our decision to include these signal messages that was sort of inspired by that. And from that, you also kind of pose a challenge to yourself, I guess, in how do you sort of design without designing? How do you structure the content without? Of course, the last thing that you want to do is sort of design the protest or sort of look it down in a way, say like, what happened there? That's what that was, because we were sort of. It's too soon to say what it was. Clearly we all experienced something profound, and we all think that this is really important to remember, but what it means is sort of, it's up for discussion. Also, the genocide is ongoing, the demands have not been met, organizing continues. So how to reflect that in designing the way that we kind of ended up dealing with that challenge was by really stepping back in a way, like going for, like typographically going for just times and career, like very, very sort of basic fonts, going for these sort of full bleed spreads, really trying to make the content speak for itself. That was sort of our way out. And that's also kind of how we, in a roundabout way, ended up in this anti-book territory again, I would say. Yeah.
But I think you did a great job in doing this. It looks really beautiful. I think maybe that's it for now. Obviously we could talk about this for probably as long as we've worked on it, but years maybe a bit long to talk. Let's now hear some more from the student organizers, because this is not just about a book, it's what the book is about, which is organizing. So let's talk about that a little bit more. Thanks for joining me for this part. I'll just announce the others if you would. I'll leave the stage collectively. I just want to give the floor to Dyslexia and Diana and Lala, who will have a conversation with the three of them about organizing in solidarity with Palestine and the continuation of our movement. So give it up for them. Thanks for listening. Guys? There they are. Good, great.
Hello. It's not just me speaking. Lala and Diana are coming soon. I don't know where they are. Maybe they're upstairs? If anyone wants to check. Thank you. Yes, and Yasmin will also be joining. How should I? Okay, I guess I'll just start introducing myself already. So my name is Danielle. I just handed in my thesis. I was studying at the UFA. And I've been studying here for the past 5 years because I did my bachelor's and now my master's here. There's Lala coming right now. Indiana. Yes, we're just introducing ourselves right now, and I'm also a co-organizer of Tabareya Cafe, a Palestinian pop-up cafe, and last year in May I started getting more involved, well, since October 7th with protesting, which we all know is still very important, considering the rates of the genocide, which is worsening every single day. But yeah, I got more involved with the student organizing, and especially over the past year, so that's kind of why I'm here today.
Hi, I'm
Lale.
Hi, I'm Lale, and I don't know, I just organize. I just see myself as like a peon. Like a soldier, like a foot soldier. I see myself as a foot soldier, and wherever I'm needed, I like to be there and ask what people need and then organize or chant. That's what I do, I think.
it's working. Hi, guys. My name is Diana. I'm a Palestinian human rights activist. In the last almost 2 years, I've just been really busy for Palestine, of course. Through on the street, on stage, on social media, different platforms, I'm just trying to raise the Palestinian cause.
Hi everyone, I'm Yasmin from the Samidun Palestinian Prisoner Solidarity Network. In organizing for Palestine for almost 10 years, before as a student, Way back when we had a very tiny student movement, so seeing how the student movement has developed and grown has been really great, and as Sami Doon, we try and support the student movement in whatever way that we can, and that's why I've been pulled up here.
Yeah. Oh. So I'll be facilitating our open conversation today. So I thought it would be interesting maybe to talk about where we've come from, essentially. I used to live in The Hague, Lala was in Groningen, Diana in Rotterdam, and Yasmin's been in Amsterdam. So I was kind of wondering, how were you organizing there beforehand, and what incentive did you have to going to Amsterdam, or in the case of Yasmin, staying in Amsterdam? I can maybe reflect a little bit at first. So I've been studying at the UFA for a long period of time, and it's very strange studying sometimes at an institution which is so complicit, because you can't exactly put your finger on what is wrong. You just know that you don't really like being there, and like you just feel a little bit uncomfortable, very functional, me going from A to B, and that's essentially it, you know? And then after October 7th, I got much worse. And then it felt like during May, whilst I still organize in The Hague and I still think it's really important, it felt like during May there was a lot of traction, and it felt like there was a sort of outlet to let out a lot of the like a grievance that I was experiencing. You?
Where did I start? I started at Friesland for Palestine, I think, a couple of years ago. And then from October, we started organizing, and I remember in the beginning of the movement, we were just slowly trying to make people understand, being very careful. And then when the encampment started, I was there by chance. I just wanted to
see what would happen and how people change and what they can do together when they fight back against the system. So that's why I was the first time at the incumbent. And then from there, when Groningen started, I liked doing that for 31 days. And it was all still nice, let's do this, let's have an incumbent 31 days, let's talk to the people and everything. But then on day 31, we got beaten up like shit, and I got snatched in front of everybody and carried away unconscious. And then that radicalized me so much that I didn't want to do the student incumbent fights anymore. I wanted to do much more. I wanted to fuck up the whole system, because the first time you go to police brutality and jail, you feel like your safety is gone. That's how I felt. I was like, oh, my base, my structure, this safety that I've always felt in my life is gone now, and I'm going to be so angry at everyone and do everything I can to show that anger. And I did that through actions. So after Groningen, I just went everywhere. Anything that was needed, I would be there and see how I can be part of that. And in the end, yeah, why Amsterdam? Jazzy from the Funk, he said very beautifully, Amsterdam is going to be the city of the revolution. And I feel like that is true. Like, we have good mobilization and capacity power here, and we can put pressure on Femke Halsema a lot more here. Yes, even though it doesn't seem like that, but still, I think we still can win. So that's why Amsterdam, I always get back to Amsterdam.
I love that you already started talking about exactly like the anger you felt after the encampments and the police brutality, but let me follow the script and we can come back to that later, because that's especially why I'm here, to talk about the future. Anyways, I was actually born and raised in Nijmegen, so I've been living now almost 4 years in Rotterdam, and I would love to say I started my activism in Nijmegen, but no, there was literally nothing back then that I knew of. So yeah, I did start like around 4 years ago with activism in Rotterdam, even though it's not the same as Amsterdam, it's still active though. I started off when the genocide started, I founded the Rotterdam-Palestina Coalition with the aim to really bring everyone together. Well, after a few months, I also realized this liberal shit ain't bringing us anywhere. So yeah, like, I stepped down and I was like, I need to focus more on, you know, everything that's not liberalism, basically. So I started doing more solo actions. I mean, not solo, but more in my own initiative, with people who are also done with playing it nicely, playing it peaceful, because that's not the way to go. We never got anything in the whole history by asking peacefully. How do you think that Israel was able to do literally a slow genocide, 77 years long, and you don't think we asked, like, hey, can you maybe stop killing my family? No, of course we did, and did they listen? No. So peacefully never achieved anything. So that's... Look at me saying I will follow the script and talk about it later. I didn't. So yeah, that's where I am right now, and it's that part of me is growing every other week, because it's insane how we get labeled. It's insane about how ignorant people are in activism world, in the movement, and yeah, that's who I am actually. Yes. Woo!
I've been organizing in Amsterdam since I moved here almost 9 years ago, and to see, like, this book published is incredible, to see that this happened in Amsterdam, because things have changed so much in the city in the last 2 years because of the actions of the Palestinian resistance. They changed the course of history. They brought us all into this struggle. Some I remember when we stopped working in the university when we were students for justice in Palestine. It was after, if people here know, remember the Verkaiker in the Rue. It was an autonomous space, and we hosted Rasmea Oda, who is a Palestinian resistance fighter who is now elderly, and she has continued her fight, and she was doing a speaking tour. We lost some venues up until the day, so we ended up having it on this autonomous space, and the students were evicted from that space after. And I think after that, like, there was no Palestine, no visible student organizing happening around Palestine. So we were outside of the universities then and continuing, and in 2019 we started Samidun, which has already been established in other countries, but we saw this as a good move for us here, because we always had a very clear line of liberation of Palestine from the river to the sea, the right of return of Palestinian refugees, and the right to resist by any means necessary. And also, since October 7th, the way that the student movement has interacted with that line has completely changed. The students are not afraid anymore to stand unapologetically with the resistance. And that has strengthened the movement so much. And I know this is kind of rambly in terms of this question, but I just want to say that I think Amsterdam has shown that it is able to mobilize. I think this uprising was the first time when I saw the city and was like, wow, I'm kind of partitive here. And then it happened again in November when Amsterdam defended itself against the Zionist hooligans. So I think that the nature of how this city has responded has shown that it is actually a key part of Palestinian liberation struggle in the Netherlands. And also, I had another thing. It's just shown that it is, like, there is the capacity to mobilize militantly and strongly and on a broad level. So yeah, it's good to be in Amsterdam right now.
Yeah, I think through Tabaria Cafe, I've been very grateful in the past like year and a half to find a community. But I think sometimes the community of people who are standing in solidarity with Palestinian liberation is more visible in Amsterdam. Like, you see it more when you're walking, you feel less awkward, maybe like wearing a keffiyeh or like whatever, you know, it's more unapologetic, so that's really nice. So much has changed. Everything has essentially changed over the past year, for the better, for the worse as well. But I think it could be interesting if we maybe reflected on where we were in May last year, and sort of like in a more reflective tone, like also for everyone, like how, like what have you changed since then? Like, are you still doing the same thing you were doing then? Like, has, I don't know. Like, for example, last year in May, I kind of catapulted myself into like student organizing, because I was not at all involved. I was just in this group chat on Signal that told me to be somewhere and have tents, you know? I was slightly more, what's the word? Not, like, there's a lot of drive, you know? Slightly reactive in a sense that I was just doing whatever I could. I was putting my body on a line in certain areas, maybe not doing what was most efficient for me, just places that I thought I had to be. And now it's more interesting kind of zooming out a little bit, and I feel like I'm more involved with the United Front for Palestine now. I also, we have stickers over there. And I also sometimes take up more of a role of speeching, because I've been writing my thesis on like the student encampments, and it's really interesting to know that today is the 93rd action of like student action since October 7th last year at the University of Amsterdam, which is crazy. So I thought I would extend that question to you guys. Yeah, so where were you and how has your position changed, if it has?
I think we all keep on changing. It's like a like golven. It goes like golven. I think everybody is pushing each other to take the next step or do something different every time and time and time again. Like last year, we both were the activists that first jumped in into those actions and just let it
you
all.
You still are.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Still are.
I still just jump. I think, okay, let's see it. No, but now other people are trying to do that, and my stance is now what I always look at. How can we change the narrative? How can we do something different? Like, for example, I was angry at the Rode Lijn demonstration. I did not like it the first time, but they said to me, Lale, instead of criticizing, educate those people. So when we heard about Rode Lijn part 2, we pulled a campaign where we gathered as much flyers as we can and spread them around the different groups and organizations. Everybody was bringing flyers, education, people were bringing resistance, Iran, people tried everything they can to change the narrative about the Rode Lijn demonstration too. So I like doing, being involved in those kind of things, like where are we and how do we change the narrative, how do we do something else, how do we fight back. Like when the Hamas tunnel was here in Amsterdam, we were like, guys, we have to make some rukus, we have to make them feel that this tunnel is not welcome. And we were there like with 30, 35 people and really made them feel that it wasn't welcome. So I like, I think that's my position now. Trying to find places where we can still make impact and try to make that impact. Sometimes you get back after 24 hours from Egypt and sometimes you, then you're like, what the fuck happened? And sometimes you hear very nice stories of people that came from the Rode Lijn demo and they were happy that they went there, and this time as educators, as organizers, as people that went and did the talks that were needed to be. And I didn't go because I knew I was so angry that I would just be have a very negative effect on all of those people.
Talk about the Rode Lijn. I'm like the biggest hater, but no, let me explain to you as well, and then I'll come back to the question. I've been hating on the Rode Lijn since like the day that it happened. I was like, what is going on, right? You saw a lot of people go to Starbucks, drinking Coca-Cola, go to McDonald's after, and even though I'm so angry at those liberals, it's still important indeed to actually educate them. But my problem is also kind of that it's always been us Arabs, it's always been a Palestinian educating white people like, hey, this is not okay, let me tell you why. And to be honest, we are tired. So when I saw that after, back then, was it already 600 days? Like around 600 days of genocide, you don't know this? I'm like, then I get angry, of course. But it's also important, when I'm so happy that you did that, like looking to hijacking the demonstration is very much needed by radical activists. I was a radical leftist. I was like, oh, thanks. I thought it was so funny. I'm a radical leftist, guys. But no, because like the Oxfam embassy isn't gonna save us, and if they wanna do a big red line to like show them like, oh my god, we're on the good side, you know? Okay, let them do it, but let us hijack it and show it how it's actually done. You know, we need those 150,000 people, okay, but let us be there to show how it should be done and not just let those liberals walk and Oxfam goes with the fame. Like, look what we did, guys. Like, oh my god. Okay,
it was hijacked.
Yeah, good.
The question is, how did your how has your position changed in the past year since May? If you remember.
I remember. Yeah, so I was also there at the encampment. It was fun. I was not in the encampment, but I was on like the side demo that was there. But that was fun actually, getting pulled away by the police first, then like the walking through the whole Amsterdam trying to find you guys. It was chaos. But to be honest, I like chaos. But let me tell you why. Like, there is a genocide going on. There's literally a mass murder going on. Like I said before, we cannot ask peacefully, hey, stop those children. We did. Did they listen? No. Like, there needs to be more going on, and you've noticed that every time there is like an eviction, every time there is a police violence, every time there is chaos, but whatever demonstrations, it hits the news. It hits the news, it gets into the House of Representatives, they're going to talk about it, and we need that. We need more chaos, because what's happening in the world is the biggest chaos imaginable. If the world actually worked by its rules, then asking, hey, to stop the killing of children, it would work. But it doesn't work. So I was also someone, like, I don't think last May, but especially at 7th of October, to also go to the Red Line demonstration and just walk there peacefully. I've changed. Last year, May, I was very much also involved in the movement in the same position I am right now. And even though I was not in the encampment themselves, because I was scared of shit, it's like, you've seen what happened, it was not okay what happened. But I do think it was a very strong stance in the movement, especially for Amsterdam as well. Like, what did Jay-Z say again? Like, the Amsterdam is the...
Where the
revolution starts, and I also truly believe that, because I'm from Nijmegen / Rotterdam, and let's focus on Rotterdam, also big city, it isn't gonna happen there. Trust me, it isn't gonna happen there. If it needs to happen somewhere, it is Amsterdam. So also what we talked about upstairs as well, with the Maccabi hooligans chaos, that the Moroccan community out of themselves went to the street, the taxi community out of themselves went to the streets, and also we as Palestinians didn't need to ask, like, please, can you do something? It made me so happy, because, like I said, we are tired of mobilizing again and again and again. But to see that the Amsterdam community is, like, helping by their own ways out of themselves made me extremely happy.
Thinking to like May last year to now, I'm not sure if my like position has changed like politically, because I've been organizing for some years, but I know I as a person have changed so much because of witnessing the level of violence and being with, like, standing shoulder to shoulder with people going through this violence, being arrested on the street together. Building those relations in the street, in the front lines, has changed, I think, all of us. And I think we've all had to deal with that. And for some people, I think it's really important to take care of each other and keep people in struggle, because we know that they use this level of violence to try also to scare people from actually organizing and mobilizing. I remember, like, last year on the first day, on May 6th, like, I left the encampment about 2 a.m. when things seemed like it was calm. I was starting a new job the next day, so I was like, I can't get arrested, like, not on my first day. But watched the live stream once I got home, and I remember seeing my comrades on the live stream with standing on the barricade with what are they called? The bulldozer. In front of them, and all that I had in my head was the story of Rachel Corrie, watching that, seeing that level of like how much the powers that be here, the state and its agents, the police, are completely in line with Zionist tactics and all of this. Yes, if anyone doesn't know, Rachel Corrie was a young American woman who was in Palestine doing solidarity work, and I think it was around 90, it was in the mid-90s, early
2003.
Yes, I was thinking 93. 2003, she was martyred in Palestine because she was standing in front of a Palestinian home that was going to be demolished, and she was, the bulldozer just ran her over. And there are other examples of international people who were martyred in Palestine in that way. And just, I think it just really was a consolidating moment to bring our resistance here closer to the broader, like, to really being integrated within Palestinian resistance. When you are giving blood for the struggle, we are raising ourselves to be equal in struggle. And I think, like, overcoming, like, our differing identities and things like this, I think that there has been so many hard lessons, because you know, the encampments were all, it's wonderful to see this, but we all know that there was a lot of stuff that was going on and that had to be reckoned with after. And I think that that is also, I think it's, there's been so many lessons, and I see that those lessons have been taken on so much by the student movement and how you're organizing now. And I think maybe not our positions has changed, but our understanding has deepened and our tactics have sharpened. Because I think, yes, it's important to keep our like strategy rigid. Like, we know that what we're fighting for we don't stray from that, that it is complete liberation that we are fighting for. And then underneath that, you can have vast array of tactics and play around with those and in different ways. And I think that those are the things that have really changed, like the understanding of how to apply those.
It's like vallen en opstaan, we say.
Yeah. Thank you.
Wait, can I add something? I like something you said, because, for example, at Rotterdam with the police violence, time has been fine. Like 2-3 years ago, when we had the demonstration against the F-35 parts that are getting shipped to the port of Rotterdam, we had a demonstration in front of the Stadhuis. And we did it twice. The first time we created some chaos, we blocked the trams, went to the big Kruispunt, what's that in English? Intersection, thank you. The big intersection at Rotterdam in front of the Erasmusbrug, and we blockaded basically the intersection, because it gets insane how are the F-35 parts that are actually like literally killing our people being shipped in the port of Rotterdam. Okay, so the police didn't really intervene. So eventually did, but they didn't really intervene. We did burn the Israeli flag and that type of stuff. We didn't intervene. At the end, they did blockade us, they forwarded us, so we had to go home. So next demonstration, already at the start of the demonstration, I think it was a week later, the police was with MA buses already standing and waiting for us. I was not there myself, I was late. After the speeches were finished, the police already started, they wanted to go to the police station, it's literally around the corner for RSC support, because there were four comrades were detained there. The police didn't let them, and they already started like cattling and snatching them immediately. They didn't even do anything yet, didn't even block anything yet. But first of all, I think they did that because to like take us like that I want to go there, but like to what's it like? Get back. That's the I was looking for. I think they wanted to get back us from the week before, because they didn't do anything the week before. And when the second demonstration happened, they immediately started escalating themselves. So they wanted to get back us for last week. But I think they also did that to scare us. Indeed, to scare us that we wouldn't do it next week again, or do it that time. Don't do it in the future again. So they definitely want to scare us, because if you were there, you could have seen like, what the fuck? Why are you doing this? We didn't do nothing. But even that, we did RSC support 24 hours. It was insane. 90 people got arrested. But the police really thought that they could have scared us. But it's not that, it doesn't work like that anymore. And where I want to go to this, maybe like 618 days ago, on the 7th of October, when we had such demonstrations, the police could have scared us. But right now, after what all we've seen through, the police doesn't scare us anymore. If they escalate, we come back 10 times stronger and with 10 times more people. And I think that's something that's very much changed since the beginning of the genocide, that the police cannot repress us anymore. If they do something, we'll get even more angrier than we were before. And I think that's a very important and strong trait that we created in the movement.
Yeah. So if you are interested in taking the fight further with Maersk, geef Tegengas account on your water, because we need people again soon to be even stronger. Next step, guys.
I see a question. No? I mean, Jamil? Yeah, you need to come here.
I can also
just scream.
I can scream. I've been screaming a lot. think also something that we maybe need to consider more critically also when we have an object like this is also not to fall into this romanticization of community or revolution, because as Lev said on stage not long ago, it's like we haven't. The genocide is expanding. The assault on Iran is following the exact same playbook as it is in Gaza. The Save Bay has not moved. So I think it's also really like a moment for us to collectively think about what are we willing to put down. Like, what are we willing to give up, to lose? What new tactics and escalatory things are we willing to do? Because we achieved something powerful, but this should not be something that we close and romanticize and remember, but should be a propelling force to something that needs to urgently happen now. So I think it's also really this question of what does this tell us about how to organize, how to be autonomous, how to gather different collectives together and not fall into kind of this idea of romanticizing what we did, but learning from this archive and driving it even further to push the potential even more.
Thank you. I see another point over here. Yes.
So you get the message, you know. Think when you talk, of course you can talk. First Palestinian, then you second. It's not the option.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing this. And I think what you just said is a really important reflection and is actually very nicely bringing it into my points I was going to make now. I think it's quite important to feel fear, because I think something that's been grounding me, at least, and I think I can speak for a lot of students, is the posture that we are in solidarity with Palestinian liberation. And when you're experiencing so much repression for the first time in your life, it's very difficult to lose sight of what you're actually doing this for, which is for the genocide. And like, as much as we are in this posture, this is something that we can also... I sometimes refrain from calling myself an activist because I think it's an identity that I have the privilege of being able to turn on and off, you know? And this isn't a lived experience. As much as I can try to understand it this is not my story, you know? And like, I try to engage myself in a radical posture, but like you said, indeed, it's really important to remember that we are in solidarity for Palestinian liberation, you know? Like, and if you want to be understanding how Palestinian liberation is going, and you turn to Al Jazeera, for example, and you see that everything is getting so much worse, then you have to think about the posture that you're holding and what is actually being achieved. Like, I remember last year in May, for example, I felt very liberated, like being at the Al-Aman High Sport, standing on top of this building, but at the same time, negotiations were taking place. And this is for an academic boycott, and they were going to shit, you know, like the Saving Bay wasn't budging, nothing new. But because I was almost losing sight of that and how euphoric I felt, it was a good reflection to have later, like, what are you actually trying to do? So thank you so much for saying this, and Jamil as well, very good points, thank you so much.
Can I ask you another question? Is it on?
Yeah.
I do think this is also very important to have like a privileges check. Are you actively letting the Palestinian talk? Are you actively listening to the Palestinian? Are you actively reading what the Palestinians want? I've posted this like a while ago because people have been canceling me as well and have been canceling also other Arabs that still do know better usually than white people for the Palestinian cause. It is so important to indeed not romanticize the liberation, not romanticize the resistance, because there is unfortunately nothing to romanticize about. We're still talking about the mass murder that's going on. And in the same time, like, we need your help, of course, but there's also a reason why I scream all the whites to the front, all the white people to the front. It's like how it... we need your help, definitely, but check your ego, check your privilege. Are you actively trying to uphold the Palestinian Tawabat, is what it's called, the rules that the Palestinian resistance have set up for their own liberation? We don't need you to liberate us, we can liberate ourselves, but you need to listen what we're saying in our liberations and what we want exactly. So check yourself every other day, from are you actively upholding the, what the Palestinians want and what they're asking?
I think to add on you both and on the part that you're saying about romanticizing and about privilege, I think it's time to dedicate everything of your life for this liberation. It's over. We have already been doing this for 2 years. There is no time to think for hours about where to put a tent or not. We have the privilege, we have all of the privilege in the world to just quit everything that we are doing for a year and get back on it. But we have to start dedicating everything into making these changes. What we are seeing is the people of color are doing this dedication, and some white people too, but everybody needs to start doing this dedication, because if we all do this dedication, it will be less on the Palestinians and the refugees and the POC. It will just be a heavy weight to carry for us all, and not only on those couple that are ready and that are there to give up everything in their life to stop this. Because, yeah, center Palestinians, but at the same time, see their pain. Like, see their pain 24/7. Like, we are in pain watching the genocide. These people are, the Palestinians are in pain watching, like, feeling everything every minute, every day. So if you don't feel that pain, just like the Palestinians, it's time to dedicate your life to help stop it. Please.
You need to know that as Palestinians, like you said, the word activist, as Palestinians, you are born an activist. As Palestinian, the moment you were born, there's something telling you that we don't want you here. The whole Western world is apparently controlling the whole world, doesn't want you here. On your status, you don't have a passport. If you have a status of refugee status, it's like stateless. They don't want you here. You're not supposed to be here. That's how Palestinians feel. And especially then the genocide going on and the people of Gaza, the little boy who's screaming, where are the Arabs? They're just wondering, like, why can no one stop this?
we were born, the moment the second we were born, we were as Palestinians, we were like a population that no one wants, and that is painful. Like, I've heard that, like, trauma will go back to 5 generations, and I can actively feel that as well. I can feel my ancestors giving me power, giving me protection, telling me where to go, telling me where not to go, because they know I'll be needing here to amplify my ancestors, amplify their voices as well. And by the way, one more thing, not to diminish what the white people have done, like, I'm so extremely fucking grateful what all of you have done for us. And at the same time, like, there are enough Arabs and Muslims who also still go to the Starbucks, and are like that boy screamed, where are the Arabs? There's still not enough Arabs who have been doing stuff for us. So I'm extremely thankful for all the Dutch people who are standing up for us.
Yeah, I think for me, I just always take my lessons from the prisoners' movement, the Palestinian prisoners' movement, because I think, we do that as an organization, as Samidun, to use the prisoners' movement and the prisoners' struggle as a way to talk about Palestinian liberation. And I think that we find so much to learn from in terms of Samud, in terms of resilience, in terms of how to struggle in impossible conditions. So yeah, just wanted to add that.
Thanks.
Yeah, like, I'm privileged, like, I'm a Palestinian, but I'm still privileged because I have the Dutch passport. Like, why do you think I went to Egypt? Because I have the Dutch passport. Like, I'm using my privilege how I should be to help my people. But it was another question.
It's more of a comment. I don't mean to rain on your parade, but this whole talk with Amsterdam being the center of a revolution really rubbed me the wrong way. I think it is incredible for, like, us to be in a country that still regardlessly, like, supports Israel and still continues to send weapons in a place where the Red Line protest is quite an exception because it's a historical demonstration with 100,000 people, but in other countries in Europe, 100,000 is a weekly protest for Palestine right now. Other countries have already signed on to military embargoes, have working class people who are refusing to put weapons and ammunition in ports and inside of airports. I think that, like, us to really look at our situation and say that Amsterdam is doing great or that the Netherlands in general is doing great is absolutely, absolutely a lie. Absolutely a lie. And I don't think that we should look at mobilization as a means to reflect what it means to be actually organized. And not talking about, like, personal people who are going through things as individuals, but rather as collectives. And that's something that was very highlighted when you were talking first about the book and about the way that it was made together as a collective. And I think that to be listening about the students' movement, it would be a very big question. I imagine that a lot of people who are present here have experienced how different organization groups and bodies of students have been trying to organize internally with each other and build coalitions and have failed because organizing is very difficult. And there's no one that actually agrees about it. It's not just about the Palestinian narrative. The Palestinian narrative is not one and only. And the Palestinian people are not